This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Budget agreement reached. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Jennifer Koschenka, it is Tuesday, July 23rd. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Negotiators on Capitol Hill have found an increase in spending that Republicans and Democrats can live with for the next 2 years. We'll have details in just a moment.
Former special counsel Robert Mueller testifies before two separate House committees tomorrow on his Russia investigation, a preview in about 2 minutes.
President Trump says Iran is lying about arresting 17 people tied to a CIA spy ring.
And suburbs debate next steps as golf courses continue to shut down.
Last year, there were 200 golf courses that closed in the U.S., and that number has been holding pretty steady for several years. And the golf industry experts expect we'll see that many closures the next couple of years, too.
Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borlein on homeowners trying to keep developers from building on golf course land. She's here in about 20 minutes. Budget negotiators in Washington have reached a bipartisan compromise to avoid a fiscal crisis, while at the same time pushing next budget debates past the 2020 election. The $2.7 trillion spending plan over 2 years increases federal spending while also raising the government's borrowing limit. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The compromise would suspend the debt ceiling until the end of July 2021. It also raises defense and domestic spending by $320 billion more than the limit set in a budget law 8 years ago, demonstrating a willingness by Democrats and Republicans to ignore debt and deficits. Small cuts to Medicare would be delayed. The White House was hoping for $150 billion in total spending cuts. The agreement still needs approval from the House and Senate. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin had stressed that without action, the government could exhaust its ability to keep paying its bills in early September. President Trump on Twitter called it a real compromise in order to give another big victory to our great military and vets. Another day of demonstrations in Puerto Rico, where angry residents are demanding the resignation of embattled Governor Ricardo Rosselló.
We want a government that really represents us, that is working there for the people of Puerto Rico and not for their own benefits and the benefits of their own friends.
Tens of thousands clogged a major highway yesterday. The administration of Mr. Rosselló is contending with the recent indictments of two former high-ranking officials and the leak of more than 800 pages of vulgar messages between the governor and his advisors that included sexist and anti-gay comments and were dismissive of deaths tied to Hurricane Maria 2 years ago. He lobbied for his job on Fox News yesterday with Shepard Smith.
Well, again, I've apologized for that. I'm making amends for all of those efforts.
You've apologized for what specifically, Governor?
For all of the comments that I've made on the chat.
On Sunday, Mr. Rosselló, a Democrat, issued a video message that he intends to serve out his term, but says he won't run for re-election next year. When former special counsel Robert Mueller delivers long-awaited testimony tomorrow about his investigation into President Trump and Russian interference in the 2016 election, Democrats are hoping to coax from him the kind of dramatic moments that could galvanize public opinion against the president. Republicans, meanwhile, are eager to elicit testimony that shows the investigation was biased from its inception. Devlin Barrett, national security reporter at The Washington Post, says those who know Mr. Mueller best are skeptical he will meet either side's expectations. Devlin, explain.
Mueller is a very reticent witness before Congress. He doesn't particularly enjoy the process, according to folks who have known him for a long time and have worked it with him. But he also has some interesting tells, I guess you might say, ways in which you can draw an answer out of him if you are a persistent, careful lawmaker.
All right. Like how, for example? Because you referenced testimony from like 12 years ago.
Right. So there's a really interesting hearing that happens in 2007 in which lawmakers press him pretty closely on the substance of his private conversations with the then Attorney General and some other senior officials. And they were really trying to get some answers about a standoff within the Bush administration that had happened years earlier. And what happens in that hearing is very interesting, because Mueller starts out saying he doesn't want to talk about his private conversations with senior officials. But when lawmakers press him carefully, politely, and persistently, he basically concedes the point and starts talking about those conversations. And, you know, I think in an era when we see a lot of lawmakers yell and scream and pound the table, I think there's a clue there about how, you know, Mueller might be able to provide some more information that's maybe not at the at the edge of a, you know, angry microphone.
Did we pound the table as much back in 2007 as we do today?
You know, it's funny. Watching that hearing, it's really striking how much calmer and civilized it is, even though they are arguing about some fairly intense issues, such as government surveillance and problems in how the government did that, as well as essentially struggles within a government over some pretty serious spying powers. So, you know, there were some tense issues on the table, and there were some tense moments on the table, but nothing like what we've seen in the last, you know, year or two when it comes to the fights in Congress over the Mueller investigation, over the Justice Department and the FBI. You know, it almost looks quaint by comparison, this hearing from 12 years ago.
We're speaking with Devlin Barrett, national security reporter at The Washington Post. His piece is called "Hostile Witness or Democrats' Hero? Mueller's Past Turns Before Congress Offer Important Clues." Is there more on the line politically this time around than there's been in the past for Mr. Mueller on Capitol Hill?
I think so, because I think in many ways this will be the defining case of his career. I think a lot of people close to him would argue that whatever you think of the Mueller case, it probably shouldn't be the defining case of his career. But I think politically, this thing has just been such a powder keg from the beginning. That's probably inevitable. And so I think Mueller's goal is to show that this work was done well and not get sucked into any partisan back and forths or finger pointing or accusations. But, you know, I think, look, the lawmakers will be on display here, too. And I think one of the big questions is, how do they behave? If they behave angrily and loudly, you know, that in the past, that's something that has really, you know, been a frustration for Mueller and has made him shut down sometimes. And a couple times he's punched back in those hearings when he's been yelled at. So it'll be interesting to see what the overall temperature is, because I think the overall temperature will say a lot about how forthcoming Mueller is in his answers.
So you can't really say one way or the other if he is less likely to open up when pressed from a hostile lawmaker than a non-hostile lawmaker.
I think his track record is very much that yelling at him does not work. But if you try to appeal to his sense of obligation to, you know, the way the government should work and how lawmakers need to know facts to make good decisions, he does sometimes concede that point and agree to say more than he would otherwise say. But, you know, yelling has never seemed to have cracked him in any way. And in fact, he tends to clamp down when that happens.
Thanks, Devlin. Devlin Barrett, national security reporter at The Washington Post. Meanwhile, a Justice Department memo yesterday told Mr. Mueller that his testimony tomorrow, quote, must remain within the boundaries of the public redacted version of his report. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
This human resources professional is crushing it, thanks to Kronos. And this is his hype song.
You can fall back with the pack. I'm a leader pack.
I've got HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. Now we are
engaging all the best people.
Blast off to the front of the field. This is
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. President Trump says Iran is lying about claims it disrupted a CIA spy ring by rounding up 17 Iranian nationals, sentencing some of them to death. On Twitter, the president wrote, "Totally false, zero truth, just more lies and propaganda." He elaborated during a media event in the Oval Office.
Let's see what happens with Iran. We are ready for the absolute worst, and we're ready for sense, too.
Separately, Iran's foreign minister said yesterday that Tehran does not seek confrontation with Britain amid tensions over seized tanker ships. The message from Mohammad Javad Zarif was directed at the presumed incoming British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Britain has demanded that Iran release a UK-flagged tanker seized in the Gulf on Friday. That came 2 weeks after British authorities seized an Iranian tanker off Gibraltar on suspicion of it breaching sanctions against Syria. The U.S. has increased its military presence in the Persian Gulf region in recent weeks after it alleged provocative moves by Tehran. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
President Trump and congressional leaders announced a critical debt and budget agreement that's an against-the-odds victory for Washington pragmatists seeking to avoid political and economic turmoil over the possibility of a government shutdown or first-ever federal default. The deal, announced by Trump on Twitter and in a statement by Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer, will restore the government's ability to borrow to pay its bills past next year's election and build upon recent large budget gains for both the Pentagon and domestic agencies. The political crisis in Puerto Rico has escalated to a point where many wonder how Governor Ricardo Rossello will be able to govern the U.S. territory in the coming days and possibly weeks amid the massive protest to oust him. Rossello dug in his heels late yesterday after the biggest protest the island has seen in nearly two decades, telling Fox that he has already apologized and made amends following the leak of an offensive, obscenity-laden online chat between him and his advisors that triggered the crisis.
So again, everything that was said, I assume responsibility for. I apologize for it, but I just wanted to establish I am in a position to apologize to everybody.
Puerto Ricans vow to keep protesting until he steps down. The Trump administration says it's expanding fast-track deportation regulations to include the removal of undocumented immigrants who cannot prove they have been in the U.S. continuously for 2 years or more. The change dramatically expands the ability of Homeland Security to quickly deport certain immigrants without any of the due process protections granted to most other people, including the right to an attorney and to a hearing before a judge. Yet another record for the group Queen, as the video for the hit Bohemian Rhapsody has hit a major milestone. YouTube says the clip has now gotten 1 billion views. It's the first time a video that came out before the 90s has gotten that many clicks. To mark the occasion, surviving Queen members Brian May and Roger Taylor are releasing a re-engineered high-def version of the clip. They've also launched a contest for fans to help craft new videos for Bohemian Rhapsody and two other songs.
Nice.
I think you want to be in this contest, don't you?
I love that. Ever since the movie came out, I put all the Queen hit songs on my workout playlist.
You better contact them. You might have some ideas for the video.
It's 23 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. The decline in the popularity of golf is having ripple effects in suburbs across the Sun Belt, as a couple of hundred courses continue to close each year, according to the National Golf Foundation. Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borline says communities are left with empty courses because of overbuilding during the housing boom, compounded by a 20% decline in the number of golfers lately. Valerie, what's up here?
Well, all across the Sun Belt, South Carolina, North Carolina, many, many places, you're seeing golf courses close. Last year, there were 200 golf courses that closed in the U.S., and that number has been holding pretty steady for several years. And the golf industry experts expect we'll see that many closures the next couple of years, too. So what that means on the ground is you have many, many neighborhoods built around golf courses, and the golf course goes away. So what happens? And all sorts of places are grappling with this issue.
Wow. It's just, generally speaking here, backing up just a second, this is a lack of interest in golf?
There's a couple of things going on. The interest in golf is changing. It boomed. It was at its most popular in the early 2000s, and we've seen about a 20% drop-off in the number of golf rounds played since the early 2000s. So you have fewer people playing golf, and I think, as we know, baby boomers are aging and aging out of the game, and millennials really, if they play golf at all, may go play you know, around at the driving range over beers after work, but not inclined really to spend 4 hours out on the course. So you have that, a decline in the popularity of the sport, married to an overbuilding of golf courses during the housing boom. And it makes sense if you think about it. People like to live on a golf course because it's kind of peaceful and pretty to look at. Maybe you could ride your cart around the neighborhood, but they may not necessarily like to play golf. And we're seeing the repercussions of that overbuilding and the decline in the popularity.
So you focused on the Crickin Tree Golf Course in Blythewood, South Carolina. Explain, there's a developer battling homeowners here. What's going on?
Sure. Crickin Tree is kind of a classic example, but not the only one, even in the Columbia suburbs, where a couple of golf courses in that same kind of booming area are failing, even while the population's growing. So we focused on Crickin Tree, which is a course that closed about a year ago. The neighbors are showing up at zoning meetings, county commission meetings, wearing red. They're well-organized. They've run radio ads. There's signs all over the community, no rezoning of golf courses, to ask the county to put the brakes on a plan to put several hundred homes on this golf course. But the county is in, the county says, hey, look, this is a valid use of this property, potentially. What else could it be used for? We can't block the property owner from getting some sort of use out of the land. So it's a really sticky question that Crickin Tree is posing, but a lot of other communities are in this boat as well.
Thanks, Valerie. Valerie Borlein, Wall Street Journal reporter. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Every minute you spend updating your company's employee data and systems is a minute you don't spend on your core job. Thankfully, now there's Rippling. It's the first platform that combines all your HR and IT systems together. And when you combine HR and IT, magic happens. Imagine if you could hire someone and take care of all their HR needs, including payroll, health insurance, and 401k, all in as little as 90 seconds. Same goes for your IT. You can order their computer and create their accounts in all the apps you use, like Gmail, GitHub, and Slack, all in one unified onboarding flow. That's how easy Rippling makes running your business. It's also why Rippling won PC Mag's Editor's Choice Award and is the top-rated HR and IT software on G2 Crowd. Stop burning valuable time on admin work. Use Rippling, and your HR and IT will run like a well-oiled machine. If you're looking for an easier way to supercharge your employees, go to rippling.com/morning and get 20% off. That's rippling.com/morning for 20% off.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for being with us. And welcome into Tuesday, July 23rd. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Budget compromise reached by negotiators on Capitol Hill. President Trump says Iran is lying about busting a CIA spy ring. New expedited removal of illegal immigrants begins today. Special Counsel Robert Mueller gets guidance ahead of tomorrow's testimony about his Russia probe. We'll learn today who Britain's new prime minister will be. Tropical depression in the Bahamas could make for an unpleasant experience for cruise ships. And police clarify warnings about a meth gator. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. There's nothing small about your business. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors are ready to give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions like computers with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BY-DELL to speak to an advisor today. Drug overdose deaths last year dropped for the first time in nearly three decades, according to a report this week from the Center for Disease Control. The provisional data show overdose deaths fell 5% in 2018, the first major decline during an addiction epidemic that has claimed hundreds of thousands of people this decade. While the drop is encouraging, experts say more than 68,000 deaths last year from drug overdoses remains a significant public health challenge. In addition, we're making zero progress in the battle against fentanyl deaths. More from Ken Altucker, consumer health reporter at USA Today. Ken, give us some takeaways.
Well, what was really interesting about this most recent report is that overdose deaths, drug overdose deaths, had declined for the first time in years, in decades, really. And this was attributed to several factors, and namely the reduction in deaths of prescription opioids such as Vicodin and oxycodone.
These numbers, I guess, we're celebrating in some ways but not celebrating in others?
Right. We've heard about for years the opioid epidemic, opioid crisis that has really been attributed to driving these overdose deaths higher. And really what the experts I spoke with said what this is a reflection of is a changing, what they call an addiction crisis, which really is not tied to opioids as much as several substances. And what was interesting, we saw actually cocaine deaths, methamphetamine deaths, and fentanyl, of course, is the biggest killer out there now.
All right. So on the one hand, does some sort of an awareness campaign get credit for the lowering of deaths from prescription opioid painkillers?
What we've seen for several years now, in 2016 and even before that, there was an awareness among doctors about prescribing opioids, about appropriate prescribing of opioids, because in some cases, certainly that can lead to addiction. But when the opioids are prescribed and not used, and maybe a teenager gets a hold of them, that can trigger a new case of addiction. So there's been a huge public health emphasis on reducing unnecessary prescriptions for opioids. But that in and of itself, more recently, what we've discovered is that some chronic pain patients feel that they've been targeted and they've had difficulty getting prescriptions for what they view as legitimate reasons.
We're speaking with Ken Alltucker, consumer health reporter at USA Today, about his story entitled Prescription Opioid Overdoses Drop as Fentanyl Deaths Skyrocket. No progress at all, I guess, on the fentanyl front?
Right. That's the puzzling thing here. It's those deaths continue to go higher. And what's interesting is that some experts I spoke with oftentimes say fentanyl is laced with other drugs like cocaine and methamphetamine. So people who are taking cocaine or methamphetamine are getting fentanyl cut with it. And what's troubling to public health officials is that they've really made an emphasis on distributing naloxone, which is the overdose reversal drug for opioids. But if somebody is taking, say, cocaine, they have no anticipation of needing something like naloxone, so they're not carrying it. So that's what's really troubling a lot of people right now. And so certainly a new phase of the epidemic.
So users, generally speaking, or maybe all the time, do not know that there's fentanyl being cut into their cocaine, for example? Or they knowingly purchase it that way?
That's a good question. Probably situations involving both, but certainly some areas of needed research. But the people I talk to seem to think that some people are buying this drug and they have no idea that it's cut with this lethal dose of fentanyl. They have no antidote to counteract that.
Given that the fentanyl deaths are still rising, is there a new approach that some folks are going to try to stem the tide?
Well, the DEA certainly is working to on that issue, trying to intercept illegal fentanyl shipments, and they're working hard on that. Public awareness is certainly another thing that's out there. And I think for the most part, what public health people are trying to do is trying to limit new cases of addiction, because if you don't have people seeking these substances in the first place, then conceivably overdose deaths will go down.
Thanks, Ken. Ken Alltucker, consumer health reporter at USA Today. Other findings from the CDC: across all ages, death rates have declined, but among younger adults ages 25 to 54, death rates rose 21% for white and black adults and 13% for Hispanic adults between the years 2012 and 2017. It's 19 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning,
America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we've been seeing fans run onto the field during sporting events for decades now. It usually starts and ends in much the same way. Fan who's had at least one too many beers sprints onto the field, running around aimlessly until security brings the interruption to a quick end, often painfully, for the intruder. That's why what happened in Pittsburgh over the weekend was so strange. In the sixth inning of a game against Philadelphia, a fan in a floral shirt casually walked onto the field, strolled right over, and tried to shake the hand of the Phillies' Brad Miller. Miller smartly wasn't having any of it and avoided the man until PNC Park police took notice and put the fan in handcuffs. A typical ending for an unusual encounter.
Just walked on the field?
Yeah. Which made some people think, you know, how exactly did that work? Like,
yeah.
How did you just walk on the field? I guess, you know, if you're not in any hurry, people won't notice you, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of look, you have sort of a confidence about you. It makes it look like I belong here.
Yeah.
Now, if he had probably, he could have been a little smarter if he'd worn just like a golf shirt or something.
Yeah.
It might have even gotten a little further. It might have even got to hang out there a little more. But the floral shirt certainly gave him away to anybody who spotted him.
But I guess you could, if you wanted to, just review video of staff that work in any of these parks,
right?
Get yourself a shirt that looks similar and impersonate somebody if you want to do that.
I suppose you could. Let's hope people don't. But you definitely could do that. But again, just act like you've been there. You know what I mean? And I think people won't notice, and they'll be like, "All right, I guess he's supposed to be here."
That's a tough one for a guy like Brad Miller, though.
Yeah,
because if he's out of control and he don't shake his hand,
right.
Does he do something to you, like in retaliation?
Yeah.
Or by shaking his hand, do you then encourage that behavior?
You don't want to encourage it.
Tough.
Stay away is probably the best advice. And we know, Gordon, that pizza delivery drivers can be lead-footed on occasion in an effort to get us our pies while still piping hot. And that was bad news for a goose that was in the wrong place at the wrong time in Vermont. A pizza driver named Ryan Harrington told local TV that he saw a goose waddling across the road in Burlington on Saturday. He slammed his brakes, but he heard a thud and he knew he struck the bird. He assumed the goose must have been killed, but was surprised to see it stuck in his car and still alive when he returned to work. His manager got through to a police dispatcher who alerted authorities and a nonprofit animal rescue group. The fire department arrived to help free the goose, now named Roberto, from the clutches of Harrington's grill. The bird was taken to a local wildlife rehab center where they say it may have a broken pelvis but is expected to survive.
Wow.
Just hanging out in the grill while he probably made a bunch of other deliveries.
Right. Any plans for that goose around holiday time? Or we think it'll be healed by then?
Yeah, pizza topping, perhaps? Yeah, we don't know.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This podcast is brought to you by ClearBank. ClearBank is changing the way entrepreneurs raise money with equity-free capital. The co-founders developed ClearBank after seeing how many companies were willing to part with precious equity in exchange for a bigger marketing budget. But ClearBank believes that founders shouldn't give up a piece of their company to fund marketing and inventory expenses. They make equity-free investments from $10,000 to $10 million and can get you a term sheet in less than 20 minutes. ClearBank charges a small flat fee for the capital, and you pay them back using revenue sharing. To be clear, this is not a loan. Plus, no credit checks and no financial covenants. So if you're doing over $10,000 a month in revenue, find out how you can receive ClearBank capital by getting your 20-minute term sheet at clearbank.com/Gordon. That's clear, BANC.com/Gordon. ClearBank, stop pitching and get back to doing what you love, growing your business. clearbank.com/Gordon. Hey, glad you're with us. If you're among the millions who take aspirin to prevent a heart attack, you may need to rethink that approach. Researchers at Harvard now say a daily low-dose aspirin is recommended for people who have already had a heart attack or stroke, and for those diagnosed with heart disease. But for the otherwise healthy, that advice has been overturned. Guidelines released this year ruled out routine aspirin use for many older adults who don't already have a heart disease, and said it's only for certain younger people under doctor's orders. How many people need to get that message? The Associated Press says some 29 million people age 40 and older were taking an aspirin a day despite having no known heart disease in 2017. About 6.6 million of them were doing so on their own. A doctor never recommended it. And nearly half of people over 70 who don't have heart disease were taking daily aspirin for prevention. That's an estimated 10 million people. just 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
President Trump and congressional leaders have reached a deal on a two-year extension of the debt limit and federal spending cap so to avert a feared government default later this year but add to rising budget deficits. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the measure would be voted on swiftly. The Republican-led Senate must also pass the measure before it can be signed into law. Under the agreement, the Treasury Department's borrowing authority would be extended through July 2021. Britain's governing Conservative Party is set to reveal today the identity of the country's next prime minister, with Brexit champion Boris Johnson the strong favorite to get the job. Party officials will announce whether Johnson or rival Jeremy Hunt has won a ballot of about 160,000 Conservative members. Activist Diane Abbott opposes Johnson.
Boris Johnson should not be prime minister. He was a rotten mayor. He believes in austerity, and his rhetoric and his thinking about race would take us back decades.
The winner replaces Theresa May, who announced her resignation last month and will officially become prime minister tomorrow. Two members of a police department in a New Orleans suburb have been fired, one for a Facebook post calling New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a vile idiot and suggesting she be shot, the other for liking the post. Gretna Police Chief Arthur Lawson announced the terminations yesterday.
Alluding to the a violent act to be conducted against a sitting U.S. congressman, a member of our government. We're not going to tolerate that.
Officer Charlie Rispoli was fired for a post saying Ocasio-Cortez needs a round and not the kind she used to serve, an apparent reference to her having once been a bartender. With affordable homes already in short supply around the country, house hunters this spring faced another challenge, surging prices. Adam Data Solutions says median home prices in the second quarter surged to a record high $266,000 for single-family homes and condos, up 6% from a year ago. Even in a buyer's market, the cost of homes has for decades outpaced wage growth, putting home ownership out of reach for many people. Only slightly more than half of Americans can afford a home priced 20% below the median price in their area.
Wow, that's an interesting stat. Man. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A Tennessee police department has clarified that they were joking when they suggested meth gators are possible when folks flush their drugs down the toilet. The Knoxville News Sentinel found a Facebook post by the Loretto Police Department that read, in all caps, "The meth gator is not, at this time, real." The department had warned residents not to flush drugs down the toilet, citing fears that wildlife might consume them and exhibit unnatural behaviors. The police chief has given interviews to news outlets all over the world and fielded a few calls from professionals fearing we actually had a meth-influenced gator in our custody, according to the PD. The department hopes to use the attention to raise money for a local charity that deals with children affected by drugs. Police plan to launch a website selling shirts featuring the meth gator. Whether meth or regular drugs like leftover prescriptions, you're not supposed to flush them, but they do get diluted once in the water, making it pretty much impossible for an animal to get high. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppe's, President and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.